Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money. Without a theme this morning, we'll hum along a few bars. No, we won't. We'll spare you that. This is Larry Warren, along with Doug Wells, as usual this morning. And boy, Doug, we have a lot to talk about today.
We sure do. You know, usually you have your series of M's, you know, your Mountain Money, and goes on from there. This show should be on Tuesday, and it should be the Turbulent Tuesday show.
And actually, it plays into the first guest we'll have, who is Bobby Monks, who is an entrepreneur, founder of many businesses in the financial sector, and he has a book called Uninvested, How Wall Street Hijacks Your Money and How to Fight Back. And wow, we'll have a lot to talk about with
That's
Bobby.
A controversial title, I gotta tell you. I was at the backyard bash, and I had a listener pull me aside on Friday and say, "You guys are gonna bash Wall Street again." So it's just the author of the book, and we will try to do both sides of that story. I do think that both sides need to be told. And we're going to switch gears then. Larry, I think you know two of my passions here are mountain bike riding and also entrepreneurship, and we're going to touch on each of those topics this morning. Andre Shumatov and John Lowry are here. They have started a really cool concept called Park City Bike Demos. It's kind of a mobile platform for out-of-town guests and others that want to rent top-end mountain bikes here in town, so that's another option for all of us.
Speaking of switching gears.
Switching gears, yes, there we go. And entrepreneurship, there's a startup, and we're also going to talk with Clint Betts. He is the organizer of StartFest. Larry, we had him on last December or maybe early January before Start SLC, which was a 3 or 4 day celebration of entrepreneurship in Salt Lake City. It was a huge success. Clint's doing it again in Provo. It's a 4 or 5 day event starting August 31st. Trust me, I went to the last one. You're going to want to hear this conversation. Clint does a great job. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a minute. Please stay tuned.
This summer, tune in to KPCW every Tuesday to join us for This Green Earth. We'll bring you the latest on all things environmental,
including extreme weather, melting sea ice, crazy wolverines, wild flowers, and sweaty polar bears.
All that every Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Brought to you by
Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Vail Resorts,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
And a welcome back to Mountain Money on a turbulent Monday in the markets. And we're going to talk about the stock market, investing. And we have on the line with us from New York, Bobby Monks. And Bobby, this month is out with a book called Uninvested, How Wall Street Hijacks Your Money and How to Fight Back. A little bit about Bobby, entrepreneur, has started many businesses in financial services, real estate, media, technology. He's the chairman of Spinnaker Trust, and it has over $1 billion in assets. He's the chairman of Institutional Shareholder Services. And he's a founder of Atlantic Bank. And Bobby, have you picked yourself up off the floor yet this morning there in New York? What's going on?
Well, I have to say it is a pretty extraordinary event that happened today. The Dow dropped almost 1,000 points at the opening, and so it'll be interesting to see how things unfold over the course of the day.
Now, your book is. Let me read a quote. It says, many seem to seek refuge in their money manager's aura of sophistication, pretense of competence, and projection of certainty. Most investors are simply sleepwalking through the investing process. They have become uninvested, and that is the title of your book. So obviously, the thesis of it is that money managers do not have their clients' interests foremost in their thoughts, by and large, I presume.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, the issue that I'm trying to shine some light on is the fact that the individual or average investor is being systematically taken advantage of by the financial services industry. And by average investor, I mean anyone who has a 401k, anyone has a retirement account, anyone who's invested in a mutual. I'm not saying that every single money manager is a boogeyman, but what I am saying is the system is broken. And if you look at the fact that 90% of financial advisors don't have to put the interest of their clients first, if you look at the fees and how they're disclosed and the fact that they're layers, often investors don't understand how many fees they're actually paying. And as an entrepreneur and as someone who agrees with the capitalist system, it's the only business I know where you get paid whether you make your client money or not. And what I'm trying to do is essentially to demystify the system for the average investor and then provide some guidance to him or her so that they can better navigate their way through it and renegotiate their contract with their money manager so it's better for them.
Bobby, this is Doug Wells. So full disclosure before I start asking my question, I am a money manager, I am a fiduciary, and I'm what's called a fee-only money manager, fee-only financial advisor. And I think you just brought up a number of really good points, and there's a lot of good people working at changing this, including the White House. And you started off with a statement that I think is going to shock most of the public, and it's also going to surprise many of our listeners that I agree 100% with you. And that statement was 90% of money managers do not have to put their client interests first. Tell our audience what a fiduciary is and how to tell whether your money manager is a fiduciary, I'll let you explain what a fiduciary is.
Well, a fiduciary is defined by in the money management business, and usually it's personified in what's called a registered investment advisor, although trust companies and other vehicles also have folks that have a high fiduciary standard. And that standard is, to put it simply, is that you have to put the interest of your client ahead of you, ahead of your own interest. And what that means is that if you work for a company where you are likely to benefit from higher fees rather than a better investment for your client, then you have to put your client's interest first, and they have to, and you have to essentially make sure that they're invested that way. That's not true for broker-dealers a lot of the time. It's not true for a lot of financial advisors. They have a different fiduciary standard, and it's essentially they don't have to put the client's interest or the investor's interest first, and therefore they can put them into products which are have higher fees, which is better for the company that they work for, rather than being better than for the average investor.
Yeah, we may explore that a little bit more later, but I recall earlier on in my career, this thing called the 401k came along, and it was a way of replacing pensions. Now, in the pension model, the company hired managers, and they supposedly made the best choices for the growth of the pension fund. And then the 401k came along, and that was all dumped on the individual's lap. And I remember getting a menu of mutual funds I could invest in and just thinking, I am not qualified to decide how to invest my money. And yet most of America was converted to 401ks and making those decisions by ourselves. Have we made as consumers the right decisions, or have we been fleeced for the last 25 years by making poor decisions, picking wrong funds, and not really understanding the fees associated with them?
Well, I think that's exactly correct. And I think the 401k in and of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. And I think the genesis of it was to help folks save more money. And the way it was originally set up and still is that the employer often matches the amount that the employee puts in, which is a good thing. What is a negative thing is that ability to be able to match doesn't justify the amount of fees that are often charged. And so you have an administrator for your 401k, they charge one fee, then you have a manager, they charge another fee, and then they invest you in a mutual fund, and then there's a third fee, and then, of course, the mutual fund has trading costs. So there's a fourth fee, and so by the time you add that up, you can have fees in excess of 2.5%. And then there's another sort of nasty little secret, and that is how do the investments that you have, the average investor who's invested in a 401k, how do they get on the menu? And there's a process which is perfectly legal called revenue sharing. And basically what happens with revenue sharing is someone who's in charge of a mutual fund pays the administrator in order to get onto the menu. And that doesn't have to be in the best interest of the investor. So they're generally fairly high fees as far as mutual funds is concerned.
And let's stay on this topic of fiduciary and keeping the client interest first. And I think many people think their company, and I would agree with them, their company should be a fiduciary to their employees.
That's correct.
And that revenue sharing, I think, if the employees of the company really understood that, I think it would quickly go away. And I'm glad you bring up something like that. You know, I think another point that makes it hard for consumers to make a good decision is even within the fiduciary standard, there are advisors that can wear two hats.
Right.
They can wear a hat where for a period of time they're playing the role of fiduciary, but then when it comes to pick out the investments where the fees are involved, then they can change hats and say, well, for this part, I'm not a fiduciary.
Right.
How did we get here? How did the industry end up so messed up and not focused on its customer? In any other business, individual companies would not thrive, would not survive with a model like this. How did the financial industry get here?
Well, I think it's really a structural issue, and I think a lot of the times the way the retirement process is set up for the individual investors is structurally put forth in a way that has become increasingly beneficial for the money managers and less good for the actual investors. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they have a very strong lobbying group in Washington that has over time changed the various 401ks and IRAs, et cetera, to the benefit of the money managers rather than the average investor. And the fiduciary standards, you're right, can be divided. The two basic fiduciary standards are, is it a suitable investment for the investor, which is the lower fiduciary standard, or is it in the investor's best interest? And I think that the industry has been trying for years to keep it on the lower standard, which is suitability. And as you probably know, there is a DOL, Department of Labor rule, coming out right now, which is trying to change that so that anybody who manages a retirement account has to go to the higher levels of fiduciary. And the industry is fighting that tooth and nail. Not only is the industry, but FINRA, who's supposed to protect the consumer, is also against it. And I think the industry hasn't been able to overlook its own self-interest.
Yeah, and FINRA, for folks that don't know, like I'm an RIA and I'm regulated by the SEC. FINRA is an industry group that was put together to self-regulate itself. And that has its advantages. It also has its disadvantages. I want to circle back to Larry's point about the 401k, because Larry, I think your experience is very similar to a lot of folks. You know, they start their first week of work. Oftentimes you got to wait 6 months or a year to get in the 401k. You're in the 401k. There's the company matching, as Bobby mentioned, which is a great thing, and people should take advantage of that. And then they're shown this menu of investment options. And how does the average person research it? And all the points that Bobby's talking about, the embedded cost, oftentimes as high as 2.5%. Are disclosed, but they're disclosed in the 100-page document in 10-point font.
You get all these thick prospectuses, probably now online you get them, but in the old days you were just handed a
right.
Manhattan phone book you were handed.
Exactly, and you have to, nowadays you have to click the button saying, I have received these, or I acknowledge I have access to these. And the fees are in there, and I want to explain to the audience the importance of these decisions, because oftentimes people make their 401k allocations, and then they don't change it. You know, you might start when you're 30, and now you're 50, and your investment strategy likely should have changed.
That is the other point, is you can invest in any number of different sectors, but then you need to monitor those sectors and change it up from time to time.
So let me go here, and then, Bobby, here's my question for you. There's a third-party think tank called Dalbar. Bobby, you're probably familiar with them.
Right.
They study 401ks and what happens to the average investor, and what they found is the average tool that is being offered, equity tool that's being offered through the 401k, actually does okay. It does about what the market does. But the average person selecting amongst those choices ends up doing just a tiny bit better than inflation. So they end up getting less than half of the returns of the investments that they can get in. I call it the investor behavior penalty. And the reason I call it the investor behavior penalty is folks are reacting like many people are today to when the market's up, when the market's down. They're reacting to fear and greed. And the impact of that is the average person gets less than half of the return of the tools that they're investing in. And that's a huge, you multiply that by 20 years, it's big, big dollars. Right. Bobby, what can people do to protect themselves and to help themselves from that investor behavior penalty?
Well, I think what I'm advocating and what I think is really important and where I actually think the biggest risk is for the average investor to become engaged with whoever is managing their money. And in the book, I outline a series of questions that they can ask their money manager. For example, do you invest in the same stocks that you're putting me in or the same mutual fund? How do you get compensated? Do you have a conflict of interest? Do you have to put my interest first? And because I think passivity is really the biggest risk that a lot of folks have because of the way the system is structured. So what I would advise any average investor right now is to become engaged in the process. And to make sure that they understand what they're getting into and to ask these questions and make sure they understand the answers to those questions. And if they don't like what they hear, then to go to another party and ask the same questions. And, for example, are you a registered investment advisor? Because there's a higher standard there. And that's a very, very important distinction. And so not being engaged, I think, is a very, very big risk, especially around 401ks.
We're talking with Bobby Monks. He's the author of Uninvested, How Wall Street Hijacks Your Money and How to Fight Back. I think you also have some profiles in your book of some of the people you have looked up to in the investment world. Talk a little bit about Jack Bogle, founder of Vanguard.
Well, you have to give Jack Bogle a great deal of credit for what he's done for the investment world. I mean, he has managed to reduce the fees that folks are paid, especially in some of his index funds, in a way that I think really gives the investor a potential options. But it's also important to remember that, not all index funds are created the same, and so that there are some higher cost index funds. There are trading costs in index funds that are not always disclosed. Sometimes they are. And in an index fund, you really don't know what you own at the end of the day. So you could own something that you don't really like, something that's unappealing to you as far as from a social perspective. And then the other issue that I have with index funds is that there's so many stocks in an index fund that how do you know which one to pick? And that's a very complicated decision to make, and the average investor is not really prepared to be able to do that, and so that you essentially have to hire someone to help you pick that, and that is an additional cost, and so it defeats to some degree the purpose of going into an index fund, because the cost for hiring someone to pick, if it's a percent of assets under management, for example, can be a relatively high fee.
And the polar opposite of a mutual fund, and especially an index fund, which is this huge collection of every stock that's in a particular index, The opposite of that is buying an individual stock, and you're kind of an advocate of that, studying companies and buying one you like, or several you like, and stick with them.
Well, let me just be perfectly clear. I'm not giving people financial advice.
Sure.
What I'm trying to do is to say that there are options out there that you can take, and that it's important to understand, you know, what those options are and what each one means. And there are, you know, trading individually can have a downside as well. You certainly don't want to be day trading. I would never advocate that. But no matter what you do as far as an investor, you're always making a choice. So the question is, you want to be as informed as possible about what choices you're making. And the only thing that we really know is that it's harder to make money the more fees you pay. And an individual making a choice on an individual stock is the least amount of fees you can pay. Now, there's a continuum there, and One of the other ways of doing that is just to get individual advice from a registered investment advisor who can you know, on a fee one time basis, can say, you know, this is where you ought to set up your structure in terms of what you should invest in. And that's a relatively inexpensive way to do that, and it's the least expensive to do through an individual stock.
Yeah, Bobby, and I want to piggyback on your comment. You're not giving financial advice. It's really not the purpose of this show to give financial advice either, and neither am I. But yet you're sharing some great information with us. And the whole idea of the individual stocks, that is one of, if not the lowest cost way to go. It's one of the lowest cost ways to go. The real cost there is the time, because I have many clients that are with me now that prior to coming on board with my firm were successfully investing in individual stocks. The challenge there, the folks I've seen do it successfully, it just takes time. So
right.
If it's your passion, you do have to listen to the quarterly earning calls. You do have to read the annual
right.
reports. You have to follow what's happening in their industry. And there's folks that for a period of time, maybe 10, 20 years, they just love doing that, and that's great. And then there's a period of time they move to Park City and they want to go mountain bike riding and they don't want to spend the time. And that's maybe when it makes sense to hire an outsider to give advice. I want to ask your thoughts. You know, one of the things with Bogle is, and I agree with you, he's been great for the industry. Really, the passive investing, and you know, his theme is you cannot beat the market. And there are people that for periods of time beat the market. But what do you think an individual's goal should be? Bogle would argue your goal should not be to beat the market. If it's not that, what should your goal be?
Well, I think what I'm advocating is to make sure you get the fairest deal possible. And what you articulated, I think, earlier is really what folks need to think about. And that is to be able to, if they decide that they don't want to pick stocks individually or they don't want to pick mutual funds individually or index funds or anything else, that they shop around and make sure that they get into the market in a way that where there are conflicts of interest, where the fees aren't ridiculously high so that you end up losing a certain amount of money over time. And where the person who's doing the investing has some skin in the game as far as their own investment and what they're doing for themselves. So I think if you can, the really important message that I'm putting forth is to make sure you understand what the structure and the process is of the way that you invest. And the only way you can do that is to ask the questions which I outline in the book.
Well, thanks very much for the conversation and for joining us this morning. We're going to have to leave it there. Our guest has been Bobby Monks, the author of Uninvested, How Wall Street Hijacks Your Money and How to Fight Back. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, Bobby.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Okay. Bobby, thank you. Great information. Thanks for sharing with us.
Bye-bye.
And maybe we'll have time at the end here to talk a little bit about what is going on today.
Hopefully we do, yeah.
And whether or not we need to start worrying about what's happening. Before we move on to the break, I just wanted to take a minute, Doug, and say twice a year we have this event called Pledge Drive, and it is it's an exhausting marathon for the staff and the volunteers here, but it is so unbelievably rewarding to hear the phones ring, to talk into the microphone and say, if you value what we do, will you give us a call and support this station? And to have the volume of calls come in, and we don't have the final numbers yet, but it's you know, it's up toward 1,000 individual phone calls, and the money raised is north of $100,000, and when you combine that with the other pledge drive, that makes up one quarter of our operating income, and it is just humbling, energizing. All the rest.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I was in here. It looked exhausting. You guys were all running around. It was a very busy week.
It is. It's a good thing it isn't a 6-day pledge drive, because
I think that long ago.
Well, yeah, we did have a live auction on Saturday, and but now we have moved that online, keeping up with technology, and do much better with an online auction, because that opens it to the world, really. Anyone with a internet connection. But I just want to stress to everybody listening that, boy, thank you so much. We so value your appreciation for what we do. It really validates this coming in, day out, and talking into a microphone where you don't really know who's at the other end on the speaker listening.
Yeah, it's a great community, and you've got a great team here. You guys all worked hard. And then I also want to thank all the great donors. I mean, you have a very unusual pledge drive where the whole community, the business community, is behind it and offers freemiums to incentivize people to call.
It's pretty unique in the public radio spectrum. I know NPR has studied the method we use, and it has proven well. It gives listeners a reward for calling in, and it just works for everybody, and we appreciate everybody's support. I also want to give a shout out to the ladies here who are the geniuses behind all of it. Cindy Kaiser, our development director, Ethel Preston, our director of first impressions, we call her.
That's a great title, and it's accurate.
And Monica Goodner, our marketing guru. And those three women put in extraordinary hours in the weeks leading up to the drive, to say nothing of then carrying the drive off. So hats off especially to those three, and to everybody else who comes in and volunteers and is on the staff and otherwise pitches in during what is one of the critical weeks for the continued health of this station. So, well, that's enough on that. I did want to get to the weather also. This should be the last day of smoky skies, and as we look out from the corner studio in Sweet Alley, they look a lot clearer today. We have a change in the weather pattern. We're going to get a southerly flow for the rest of the week. Smoke lingering today with a high of maybe 85. And then starting tomorrow, the skies should clear out. And then we're going to get those chances of thunderstorms generally in the evenings, although maybe in the daytime on Wednesday as well. So change in the weather pattern. And you know, as you look up right here from Sweet Alley, you can see the scrub oak starting to turn rust-colored. So there's a change.
Changes in the air.
There is indeed.
And speaking of change, we need to go to break and thank our underwriters. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Park City Bike Demos. Please stay tuned.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Being a member of the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business and provides a wide array of benefits. We promote your business, provide networking and educational opportunities, and even have benefit programs for you and your employees. For more information, visit us online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Andre Shumatov and John Lawry. When they tell you about their idea, we were just talking in the green room before the interview here, what a great idea this is. So, Andre, we're all familiar with bike rentals. You can go to one of the local bike shops and rent a bike. Your idea is similar but different. Tell us your idea.
Yeah, so what we do is mobile bike rental. It's very oriented specifically around what the customer wants, and that includes going to wherever they are. So basically we make it very convenient for them to, you know, they basically hop online, do a Google search, and choose us, and we come and meet them at their hotel, condo, sometimes a trailhead.
Do they have to know ahead of time what kind of bike they want, or how do you offer that selection?
It depends. So on the booking form, we have it oriented toward someone who knows or doesn't know. And it's sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure. So if they know what they want, they can select and even request a specific bike. If not, they can kind of give us some details about what kind of rider they are, height, weight, etc., what they're looking for. Is it a, do they want a cheaper bike? Do they want a more expensive bike, etc., etc.?
And you have a bit of an edge in that your other day job is internet marketing.
Yep, correct. Yep, the one that actually that I pay myself from. Yep.
This is so. This is the startup money is coming from your other venture.
Yeah, correct.
And in studio with us also is John Lawry. First off, John, welcome to Mountain Money. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us here, guys.
And what do you do for Park City Bike Demos?
I manage the trucks. We have two trucks and one other guy that helps me out. I run the logistics of everything. I do deliveries. I talk to people on the phone. I help support at events. Just play with bikes.
You play with bikes, but yet the logistics of it, and then you toss in the fact that your location is mobile. I'm sure it gets quite complex pretty quickly. And you guys are inventing this, right, as you go. So
entirely.
What are some of the things you've learned in the first couple weeks, couple months of doing this?
Checklists are key.
Don't want to get out there and forget a helmet for the client.
Or your socks.
Yep.
Pedals, shoes, everything. It's we try and make sure that everybody has everything set up down to water. People forget water.
So these trucks look like step vans, like old milk trucks, I guess, or food trucks is what they look like. It's a food truck less the food, and so is there a whole bike shop inside? Can you do tune-ups, repairs, maintenance inside the truck, and are you driving the truck to the hotel to meet the guest, or how does it work?
Yes to all of the above. We aren't set up as a full-on repair shop, but we do tune, we do all of our own maintenance, we maintain all of our demo fleet in the trucks. We have two trucks, so we kind of balance things from place to place, but we go wherever people need to be. Somebody comes by me when I'm parked somewhere and they need something fixed on their bike, I can do it. I'm capable of that.
Well, how do they know where to return the bike if the bike shop moves before the end of the day? Or you must have some prearranged meeting points.
It's a matter of constant contact. We're always talking to the customer back and forth. They have my company number. They have my personal number. I go wherever they would like to be. If they'd like to be picked up at the trail, then that's where I'll go. If not, we can set something up prior. And
so, could you start them at one end of Mid Mountain and pick them up at the other end, that sort of thing?
That's a pretty standard thing, actually. So yeah, we can.
And what about, do you find most of your clients are pretty experienced cyclists already, and they just came here, and obviously traveling with your mountain bike would be a hassle? Or is it more people, hey, we're in Park City, we're looking for some fun to do today?
A little of both, to be honest. Most people are in from out of town. They want to ride something new, something that they don't own. Maybe it's we have a new part on a bike that they want to try out, that kind of.
Yeah, carbon wheels, for example. So we ran out. We're one of the few people that's actually even a separate line item. So a lot of people haven't tried carbon wheels.
I could take my bike and swap it out and put carbon wheels on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Because that's a pricey option. You want to make sure that it's
really going
to make a difference.
Yeah, you want to see if there's something to it and if it makes a big difference. And in our opinion, it very much so does, and less rolling weight and things like that.
All my buddies that have done it are big believers in it. Of course, they've had to write a big check to do it, so they're kind of committed at that point.
Yeah, a little plug is we have a whole bunch that'll be for sale soon
couple
as
weeks.
Well. Yeah, a couple weeks at pretty well priced as well.
Well, talk a little bit about, a high-end mountain bike is like a low-end car or a mid-range car even maybe.
Yeah.
So how have you been able to pencil this out and make it work? Because you have to have every size bike and a whole variety. So that's a big inventory cost. And, give an idea of what rental prices are like for these in order to recoup that cost by the end of the year.
So we have a really interesting business model. So basically, it's very heavily powered by internet marketing and by the internet. So our website, there's actually four of us. So we have one guy who's just full-time on the website, and that's content, photos, et cetera, and that's John Schaefer, well known as Photo John, and he's like one of the top mountain bike bloggers and the country. He worked for MTBR, Mountain Bike Review, for 15 years, and he's phenomenal. And so basically our website is so good, and it searches really well. So if you Google the name of one of our bikes, we're usually number 3, number 5 listing, things along those lines. And there's basically better data, photos, et cetera, about each of these bikes than is even on the brand site. So as a result, our brands love us, and we reaffirm their messaging and things like that. And so as a result of that, combined with rental and demo fleet, so basically these bikes are so good, and we're all cyclists. We, hand pick specifically what bikes we have, so they perform really well. And basically, we very, very seldom have an unsatisfied customer, and that's related to our quality of service as well as just quality of the product as well. So that you might not have heard of the bike, or you might not have know that specific model. It's not a Scott or a Santa Cruz. It's handmade in the USA, Turner, for example.
One of the nice things on these demos too is the reverse of demoing out the carbon fiber rims is there's nothing that replaces being in shape as well. And what I have found, Larry, on cars, I buy my cars used, I buy my bikes used either at the end of the season like it's coming up.
Yeah.
But you want to have no fancier of a bike than what you need for the job. And the nice thing about being able to demo several bikes is you may find, hey, that step up for the next $1,000, $1,500, maybe it's not worth it for you. And you're out there working out, and you're able to keep up with your buddies on the next level down.
Yeah.
And so you just get that.
Yeah, and so because of that, and so we call that ride to believe, basically, try the bike first, and you don't like it, no problem, or try a different one. But because of that, basically we get discount pricing below normal cost. And so as a result, we try to turn our bikes around actually fairly often. So we sell about one bike a week, maybe two. So sometimes, two bikes a week. So most of our bikes have 5 to 9 days on them at most. And then because we got a better price, because we made a little bit of money on a rental, we'll then sell it, and the consumer will get, $1,200, $1,800 off the price of that bike, and then we'll basically turn it around. They just love the ability to try that bike first.
Well, I'm guessing a lot of listeners right now are saying, how do I get one of those
yeah.
5-day, 7-day used bikes?
Yeah, that are basically
Off your website?
Yeah, and especially if they're road. We're about to launch the store portion of it pretty soon, and all we do is just sell our bikes. So we're not, like, selling Grupos or components or any of that stuff.
When you say launch your store component, is that a physical location? That
no, that's online, yeah, online, the online okay. store. Yeah. So
very good. And, so and Larry mentioned your website,
yeah.
And John, you mentioned your business phone number. Let's go ahead and share that with the audience.
Yeah, it's parkcitybikedemos.com, and phone number is 855-432-BIKE, or local 659-3991.
Okay. Very fine. I think we need to leave it at that. But what are you going to do in the winter? Are you going to move into skis, or are you just going to park the bikes and have fun?
We're going to get planning for next year, because basically we've done over 300 days in just a couple months. So it's been on fire, and just, again, the logistics of it are very intensive. So,
so you didn't get a full season in. You were kind of launching mid-bike season this year.
Yeah, it took us a little bit longer to get going, unfortunately, than we hoped. And that's, again, just logistics.
Well, congratulations, because, as you know, it takes more than a good idea, right? You got to get the word out. And it sounds like between you and your team, you've got that ability. Our guest this morning has been Andre Shumatov and John Lawry of Park City Bike Demos. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in this morning.
Great, thank you. Appreciate it.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about Start Fest, all about starting new ventures and finding the capital for them and all of that. We'll be back to talk with Clint Betts after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Hideout Canyon, Master Plan Community on the Lake, info at hideoutcanyon.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Beppler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Yep. Welcome back to Mountain Money. As I close with Andre, I just mentioned it takes more than a good idea to make a successful company. He is doing it. And on the phone with us is Clint Betts with StartFest. He's also the editor of Beehive Startups. I believe they have 6,000 or so followers there. Clint, thank you for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks, Doug. Good to be with you.
So I described, and I borrowed this term from a different activity that I go to, actually, believe it or not, out in Oshkosh, where it's a celebration of aviation. And having gone to your last Start Fest, which was called Start SLC, the term I used to describe that was really a celebration of entrepreneurship. Share with people what your vision for what Start Fest is going to be down in Provo and what you're hoping to accomplish.
Yeah, so Start Fest is a way for us to get all of Utah's startup community together, kind of all in the same place for an entire week, and just kind of seeing what type of connections and collisions come out of it. As you said, with Start SLC, we didn't really know what we were getting into. It was the end of January, but we had over 4,000 people come to this thing, and Start Fest is looking like it's going to be twice as big, which we're really excited about.
This is kind of a Woodstock or Bonnaroo of starting up new ventures, right? It's not just breakout convocations and then breakout sessions. It's rock and roll and partying as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's important for us. It was important for us to incorporate music in the event. It was important for us to incorporate things outside of just listening to people talk and be on panels. And really kind of see, you know, just like I said, get everybody together and just kind of see what type of fun we can have and kind of what we can learn from each other.
You know, on this show, Larry and I have been honored to talk to some of the entrepreneurs, the CEOs of some of Utah's bigger companies, the unicorns, the billion-dollar plus valuation companies. Give folks an idea of the type of speakers that you're going to have. And I know the keynote, the opening keynote, is going to be delivered not by an entrepreneur, but by a politician. Tell us about who's going to do the keynote as well.
Yes, so Governor Herbert is coming in to give the keynote, the opening address for Start Fest. We're excited about that because what he's going to do, he's going to speak for 10 minutes, and then he and I are going to do 20 minutes of Q&A. and really kind of talk about how Utah has grown as a startup ecosystem in the past, you know, 10, 15 years. As you guys know, I mean, it's really kind of rapidly become this really great tech hub. So Governor Herbert is speaking, Qualtrics CEO Ryan Smith, Pluralsight CEO Aaron Sconard, Freshly Picked CEO Susan Peterson. So it goes from kind of these high-profile CEOs like those guys down to, you know, people putting on a marketing workshop where there's only 50 people in the room. So we have over 165 events, and some of them are really high-profile speakers, and they'll attract a really big crowd. And some of them are like workshops where you're kind of like, there's less people in there, but you're kind of learning a little bit more. You're taking an hour to get in-depth on a subject. So it's a pretty wide range from like, so Governor Herbert, that's kind of an interesting one by itself. But so it's really like these kind of high-profile CEOs all the way down to these people who, you know, are really good at marketing or really good at SEO or really good at software development, doing kind of in-depth workshops.
You know, a lot of those names you ticked off there as participants, speakers, and so on are technology companies, software companies that the average Utahn who's not living in this world has probably never heard of, and yet they're billion-dollar companies operating in Utah kind of under the radar. So is that who this StartFest is for? Is it strictly technology and software, or can a guy with a great idea for a food truck that sells mountain bikes like we just had on learn something here?
So a food truck that sells mountain bikes sounds awesome.
Well, it's a food truck like truck, but it's just a mountain bike rolling mountain bike shop.
Oh, I mean,
they aren't selling tacos and bikes.
Although that's a good idea because you do get awfully hungry.
Maybe that's the next iteration of it. But is this just a technology fest?
No, not at all. In fact, we have Mary Crafts Homer. She runs the largest catering company in Utah. She's coming in. She doesn't have, you know, she's not super involved in the tech scene. It's really kind of anyone who's interested in entrepreneurship, anyone who's interested in, you know, innovation, starting a company, those are the people that we're looking for to attend this thing. We do have a very, like, our primary focus is tech. That's the world that we live in, you know, from a Beehive Startups perspective. That's kind of the world we're ingrained in. But we're slowly branching this out, and that's what Startups will see was. Startups will see was primarily tech, but StartFest, we want to be more broad and to appeal to a wider audience.
Yeah, and Larry, I'll kind of add to that too. I think for anybody that has a passion to be an entrepreneur, whether it's in technology or it's mobile bike, mountain bike rentals, part of the secret is surrounding yourself with other people that share the passion for entrepreneurship and putting yourself in situations that motivate you and keep you excited and passionate about what you're doing. And like personally for me, you know, I'm going to be going down at StartFest, and I have an interest. I have two young daughters. I have a big interest in how do we get more women involved in technology. I want to do what I can to help open those doors for my daughters. And then also, Clint, you know, I took a coding boot camp earlier this year, and the whole how do you teach people that don't know how to code to code? How do you introduce technology? And those are just communities I want to be involved with. Clint, share with us a couple other high level. You mentioned marketing. What are some other communities that are likely to be down there that people can come and plug into?
Yeah, so software development is another big one. There is this really great software development conference called Open West that happens down in Orem, Utah every year. And so what we're doing here with StartFest is kind of similar to that, where we're bringing in, you know, really great software developers for 3 days to kind of go in-depth on particular topics in that area. Crowdfunding is going to be a big one. The YouTube community that's here in Utah, YouTube marketing, as well as just, like, these people who, like, make money uploading YouTube videos. There's a lot. There's a lot more too. So TechStars is coming in, and they're, you know, going to teach people how to pitch. TechStars is a really big accelerator, a national accelerator. Microsoft Ventures is coming in. I hope there's a wide variety of different events for a lot of, you know, a lot of different interests. Because the way this will work, you mentioned like Bonnaroo or Woodstock or something. It really is like you can kind of pick, you know, which stage you want to go to, similar to those music events. You kind of plan out your day, like I want to go see, you know, this musician. That's kind of what will happen here at Starfest is you'll say, I want to, you know, go see this CEO. I want to go to this workshop. I want to go to this. And that's kind of the hope here.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, Larry, you used the term Woodstock, and I suspect, Clint, that put a smile on your face. I think, you know, organizing something like this is incredibly complex and difficult. There's just so many details. And, Clint, you're a very gifted organizer in that you empower everybody else around you and somehow are able to get them pulling towards a common vision where something organic, just maybe that nobody could have thought of ahead of time, it ends up being that, and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. You mentioned Woodstock. There's going to be bands there. There's the rooftop band event taking place at the same time in coordination with you guys. Also food trucks. There's going to be a lot of food trucks there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Clint, we have to wrap up. Again, it starts August 31st down in Provo. How can people find out more information? How can they sign up? And I think people are going to be surprised at how inexpensive it is. So please share that with them as well.
Yes. Yeah, so you go to startfestival.com. All the information is there. How to get tickets is there. It's $50 to go to for the entire week. That gets you two dinners, four concerts, and, all, like I said, over 165 events. So you go to startfestival.com, and that's how you find out about it.
Well, that's a good deal, even if you didn't learn anything.
and you'll learn a ton. Our guest this morning has been Clint Betts. He's the editor of Beehive Startups and talked with us about Startfest, which is starting August 31st. It's a 4 or 5 day event down in Provo. Clint, you're one of my favorite entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And we'll be back to wrap up the last few minutes of Mountain Money after this.
Hello, Park City. I'm Joe Simmons with Park City High School and the Minor Nation Report. Listen every Monday for the latest in high school sports and activities. The Minor Nation Report is made possible in part by UPS Stores, Rich Fine Realtor, Elliott Work Group, and Miller Orthodontics.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Doug Wells labors in the financial advising trenches daily. Is this the kind of day that has your phones ringing off the hook, or have you trained your investors, your clients, to stay calm in times like this?
Well, we've definitely worked on working with our clients to expect days like this. I mean, this is just the reality. This is what the stock market does. That said, this is a very exciting day, a very interesting day for those of us in the market.
Well, that's a exciting and interesting is
it's
not the way
exciting.
Most people.
It's clearly exciting.
Well, most people would say it's tragic. It's devastating. It's a disaster.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's how the stock market works, right? There's really no benchmark that says this is what the price of this stock should be. And when you have China dropping 8.5% overnight, frankly, I was up 3 or 4 times for the better part of an hour over the evening just watching what was going on in China, watching what was happening in our futures market. And Larry, one of the things we've talked about multiple times is to have a long-term strategy and to stick with that strategy. And your goal really should be to make good decisions during times like this. And part of that for a lot of folks might be having a little bit of cash on the side. So when the market goes down, you can look at these individual stocks, you can look at some of the investments you're interested in, and maybe pick up some bargains so it doesn't feel quite as scary.
Well, that is the what a lot of savvy investors do is wait for days like this and then jump in.
You know, we had Bobby Monks on earlier. He mentioned Jack Bogle. I saw an interview with him this morning, and his advice was stay the course, stand firm. And I think that's good advice. Over a long period of time, if you've got the right investment strategy, you should be fine. Maybe do some tweaks around the margin. Maybe do some buying to help get you in the right positive mental space. But you don't want to make any major changes. That should have been done a long time ago.
Okay, good advice. Thanks very much for joining us. This is Mountain Money. It's KPCW in Park City. And I want to thank our great sponsors, Mountain West Bank, the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Also, thanks to author Bobby Monks, author of Uninvested, How Wall Street Hijacks Your Money and How to Fight Back. Also, Andre Shumatov and John Laurie of the Park City Bike Demos, and Clint Betts from StartFest, which is coming up starting next week. So, informative show. Thanks for joining us. Headed to a high maybe in the mid-80s today, and right now it's time for